The Offside Rule We Get It is brought to you by Continental Tires.
Hello there and welcome to episode 14 of the Offside Rule podcast We Get It with myself, Hayley McQueen, Lindsay Hooper, and our guest today is Kate, not that one, she's in labour. It's Kate Partridge.
Hello, nice to be here and good luck, Kate.
We don't know, actually, by the way, that she's definitely in labour, but the baby might even be here by the time you listen to this. Who knows? But there could be an Offside Rule pod baby on the way.
It is imminent. The baby is imminent. We are, of course, the first port of call for you on your podcasting weeks when you want to listen to your football. And thank you very much for listening. I'm guessing either via Audio Boom or iTunes if you're listening on one, or you can pick up the option on the other. You can watch stuff as well via the YouTube channel, The Offside Rule TV. You can see stuff on our website, offsiderulepodcast.com. We have our Twitter. We tweet constantly. We're at the forefront of breaking news at Offside Rule Pod. So this is, of course, brought to you by Continental Tires, and we have plenty coming up for you today.
The female take on football.
Holy smokes is our final topic. Valencia are in trouble with DC Comics. The makers of superhero Batman are fighting Valencia over the use of their logo, apparently. They lodged opposition with the European Union's trademark arm, claiming that the logo is too close to two of its own images related to Batman himself. Visually, we will put this on our Twitter and, of course, online, just so you can see it. But if you're at your computer, go into your search engine and have a little look. So we're going to be having a look as well at other kind of legal issues and things that have gone on in the past or maybe even the present. My news is actually from today. We're going to have examples of strange suings or legal complaints in the world of football. They can be fun, serious, or just downright weird. We're going to be discussing loan stars as well. Alvaro Negredo, out on loan from Manchester City. We kind of forgotten him. He was brilliant for Manchester City for a spell. Then something happened to him. Well, guess what? He's got his mojo back and he's playing in La Liga. He made his first start at the weekend against Levante. I was watching that game. He played brilliantly. So we're going to be talking a little about him, but also other players out on loan from abroad, from either the Premier League or also the Championship, who are on fire. Or maybe even the other way around. We could have loan stars from abroad who are making it over here that we want to keep hold of and not let go back to their clubs. But let's get on to the first topic, right? The women's game. We're going to start and lead with our leading ladies. Unfortunately, it was a bit of doom and gloom at the weekend. Not only the dismal weather, but unfortunately not the result that we wanted for England women up against Germany. They lost 3-0, but what an occasion. 55,000 tickets were sold. Not quite as many turned out because there were transport problems. Everything that could happen to go wrong to stop fans from getting to Wembley happened. Kate Partridge was there for us. And we're also going to be bringing you reaction as well, because the Offside Rules, James Savundra was at the game for us, and he caught up with England's Karen Carney, who earned her 100th cap, and head coach Mark Sampson.
I'd never seen a women's football match before. I mean, I've played in one, the much fabled now Conti Cup, where I was in goal doing my kind of Peter Schmeichel impression right from the back and shouting across to my team. But it was an occasion, and it was something that I can honestly say I will treasure as an experience and as a memory. I think as a match, in a way, obviously the score was disappointing. We looked like we were going to go off to an absolute flyer. Jordan Nobbs hit the crossbar within the first 8 seconds, and the crowd were really lifted by that. In the end, there were about just over 45,000 people who were there. Men, women, children, banners, kazoos, drums, everything. The occasion was great. It was a typical England game, just with the sort of the top tier, maybe not covered quite so much. There was also a good Germany turnout as well. As you're looking across on the big screens, you could see all the fans. You could see all the three coloured flags. It was really quite an occasion. As I say, the German team, they were the better team. Technically, they were physically superior, technically better as well. England were perhaps a little bit stretched, and also with two goals that were on the break early on, probably really seriously dented England's chances of getting back into the game. But in terms of what it was as a spectacle, the fact that the media attention was great across, if you look on the internet, also across television and radio as well, that was really encouraging for the women's game going forward. And looking ahead for the World Cup, 6 months to go, they learn their lessons, they say, looking forward. It's a good opportunity. There are causes to be positive.
I hope as well that people weren't too disappointed with the result, because I think people should know that Germany as an outfit are very experienced, very established. Women's football over there has been in a different league to what the English league has been in for some time. You're talking about players that all of their team are pretty much a professional. We're trying to get that way. A lot of the England starting 11 do now have professional contracts, but a lot of them still don't. So I think it was always going to be a challenge. But I felt like there was a possibility, because I was actually following the game from holiday. The only thing that kept me away from this game, because I've covered football for a few years, was my holiday in the Seychelles. That beach was the only thing that was going to keep me through. But I did manage to log on and keep across it on Twitter and different social media. But I wasn't there. It was sort of to see it firsthand. But the impression that I got was that lots of people were quite worried at one point that Germany were going to run away with it, that it could have been a 6-7, 8-0. And that might not have been good after the big turnout. And it might have been a little disappointing. I think the fact that the girls rallied, they kept that scoreline to 3-0. They managed to get organised. And from speaking to Kate Borsay as well, who's usually on the podcast, who's who knows, pushing right now. We don't know what's going on. But Kate actually said to me that she felt that the energy levels and the fitness of the England team were really up there, because Germany, by all accounts, Kate, because you were there, were really making them do all the running and do all the work. And it goes to show that the WSL and the way that that's taken off has really had an impact on the fitness levels and the way, in a professional capacity, England are coming on all the time. And I think for the World Cup next summer, it's actually quite promising. I think the gap will close even more by the time we get out to that tournament, and hopefully Germany won't be running riot.
We'll chat a little bit more about that in a minute, but let's get the post-match thoughts from head coach Mark Sampson.
3-0 was a scoreline. Do you think that was a fair indication of how the game went?
I think if you look at the overall stats of the game, obviously the most important one is the scoreline, but in terms of attempts on goal and possession of the football, we're more than competitive. In terms of those stats are very similar, but we got sort of less in clinical finishing today, and at this level it is about putting the ball in the back of the net or stopping the ball going in the back of your net, and in that area in particular the Germans are far stronger than us. But moving forward for us, we've learned so many lessons from today to make sure that we're in a far better place next time we play against this type of opponent, to find a way to be more competitive. And you know, I said to the players is that even though we've lost the game, we're a million miles better as a result of that game than we were at the start of it.
Second half, you seemed a lot stronger. You seemed in control of the game. Did you do anything different at half time? Did you tell them to do anything different in the second half?
There was a couple of structural changes we needed to make, which did make a big difference in the game. And you know, when you're in this type of environment, it's very difficult to make those changes while the game's going on. But in terms of the players, I certainly saw in the first half, after they'd gone 2-0 down, they showed great resolve and character to stay in the game. And it's a really, you know, bitter pill to swallow when you can see the goal so close to half-time. Bearing in mind, we just had a good opportunity before that to score ourselves. So that was a big moment in the game. In fact, if we could have come in 2-0 with a tactical change we were going to make, you know, we could have found a way back in it. But they obviously punished us for some excellent play from their end to score that third goal. But in terms of the team in the second half, again, I thought their performance in every area of the game was very, very strong. We limited the Germans to limited chances on goal and created some good opportunities ourselves.
Do you think there's anything different you need to do now following from this game and how your side fared in preparation for next year's tournament? Is there anything you think you need to change slightly, changing personnel? Or do you feel settled with it, with the squad you've got now?
It's about evolving rather than changes. And for us, you know, we're very confident on the path we're on. We know where we want to get to, but it's going to take a lot of hard work to get there, as we found out today. But you know, we've learned a lot about ourselves as a team today, and we've got 6 months to work, and we want to be in a position in 6 months' time that when we play against the likes of Germany, because if you want to compete at major championships, you're probably going to come up against the Germans and the likes of the US, and you've got to be ready to play those games and be competitive. And you know, we certainly showed no fear today. And that's a big step for us moving forward, because you know, in the past, potentially, that's been a challenge for us. But we don't fear these opponents, but we understand where we're at in terms of what we've got to do to get closer to them.
So really, girls, it was just a bit of a blip that. It's just a shame the blip happened to happen in the national stadium with so many fans watching that we hope that we'll keep hold of. Sylvia Gore actually was the first woman to score a goal for England in 1972 against Scotland. And she was chatting. There was a really good article in The Guardian about the weekend's game. And she was actually adamant that girls need to play with boys, quote, until at least their teens. Because apparently in Germany, women play with the men up to the age of 19. And apparently that's you know, that's why it shows at the moment. So the skill levels and sheer strength, she says, were outstanding.
And I know from speaking to a lot of the girls that play in the WSL that that's one of their major complaints. Kelly Smith, in her autobiography, she's quite open about the fact that when she started out in Watford, she was very quickly booted out of the boys' teams, you're talking early doors, 12, 13 years of age, and had nowhere to go. And we've got this gulf in the women's game, I think, certainly sort of late teenagers, where they don't really know where to place them.
Well, let's get some more post-match comment now. We know that Steph Horton played in the game and absolutely loved leading her side out. Big game as well for Karen Carney. So let's hear from both of them, starting with James Savundra, who got this from Karen.
So obviously 100th cap today. What was it like going out there with the guys on such a special occasion for sort of English women's football?
A bit overwhelming, very emotional, but it was really amazing, and obviously thankful to everyone that's enabled me to do it and to lead the team out as well. So really special, and for my family and my friends.
And you say you were overwhelmed. Do you think that caught on with the players? Do you think they were quite nervous leading in, probably possibly led to the two goals early on?
I just think we just didn't find our feet. I don't think it's nerves. I just don't think we found our rhythm quite early on, and perhaps a little bit naive, but we've probably learnt so much from tonight's game that will be massive for us going forward. So after reflecting and pushing us on and giving us that carrot to dangle that we need to be better, I know in the finals that whatever team Mark selects, they'll be good to go, and they'll push the Germans or push whoever they are as best as they can.
Listen to the Offside Rule We Get It on Audioboo, iTunes and via our website. OffsideRulePodcast.com.
Ladies first. So we started with our women and we will follow them on right up until the World Cup. Who else have we been following who might potentially be out on loan at the moment? Well, Alvaro Negredo, as I mentioned, on loan from Manchester City to Valencia. He hasn't actually scored yet. He's been involved in five games. He came on as a sub in four of them, but started in the match against Levante. And he really impressed me, actually. He was back to the Negredo that we remembered, kind of really fired up. He didn't score. He created the one goal that they scored. They actually lost 2-1 since the Levante second from bottom heading into this one, and Valencia were in pretty good form. But let's chat about other players who potentially we should be keeping an eye on out there, and their clubs maybe should be bringing them back.
Listen to this particular name and see if you know who it is. Luis Carlos Almeida da Cunha. Do you know who that is? It's Nani. This is why Portuguese and Brazilian players only have one short name. If you had to say all of that in commentary, I think you'd really be struggling. But then we're looking at Nani, 28 years old. When he was at Manchester United, he scored 25 goals in 147 appearances. You know, not too bad for a midfield player. Now he's gone to Sporting Lisbon. He's out there for a year on loan, and already in 16 appearances in country and in cup games, league games, everything, he has 5 goals. I know everything's relative. Sporting are only 8th at the moment, but they have only lost one game. So in terms of relative success, I think Nani, he's not having too bad a season, actually, out there in Portugal.
Well, if you're talking about clubs that have let players go out on loan and should they get them back, it's not often that they get the option to, because sometimes it's gone so far down the line that the players doesn't want to be there anymore. They want to join the new club. They like the fact that someone else has shown more faith. All those things can happen. So in some regards, clubs need to act quickly. Well, here's a player that's current loan contract. He's out on loan from Arsenal, runs out on December the 1st. So it's fast approaching, and Arsenal have got a decision to make. Now, I'm basing this only on witnessing him a couple of times, because I do quite a lot with the Championship for the BBC. It's a French midfielder, Francis Coquelin, and he has made a brilliant start to life at Charlton Football Club on loan. Now, he was on loan. He had a loan spell with a German club, SC Freiburg, last year. He's now at Charlton in the Championship. Bob Peters, the Charlton boss, said he was really impressed with his debut. And then if you take the performance, the one that really impressed me was Charlton versus Millwall, because it's a big clash of the Titans anyway. But Coquelin actually made more interceptions in that match, more than the whole of Millwall's midfield put together.
I like the clash of the Titans, the big one, Millwall Charlton.
It is in London. It's one of the clash of the Titans, isn't it?
I think the emphasis there might be on clash, actually, there, Lynn.
Yeah, maybe. He only made two less interceptions than the entire Charlton team put together. He won more tackles as well than any other Charlton midfielder. So 23 years old. Arsenal maybe should take a chance on this young midfielder. He could go back December the 1st. Is this a player that's going to get unsettled if they don't get him back? So I would say Coquelin, look out for him. Very good player.
Well, you mentioned Nani, and he's one of those players that I have just been really shocked about, because he came to Manchester United kind of hoping that he would be as good as Cristiano Ronaldo, living in the shadows of Ronaldo, however. Louis van Gaal just did not want him there. He's not actually that keen on Adnan Januzaj at the moment either, not playing him. So Ashley Young, not really performing very well. So why not bring Nani back in? Why not this player who's shown and proven that he can actually shine on a big stage and perform consistently as well elsewhere, and get him back to Manchester United? I don't think some of the fans would have too much of a problem with that, provided that he stays injury free, because that is a massive problem that Manchester United have at the moment. But I think coming back to the top tier and being given a second chance, I think you grasp that more. I think initially when he was at Manchester United, particularly when I worked there at MUTV, you kind of saw this guy just thinking he had the right to play, and it was all kind of handed to him on a plate, and he didn't appreciate things very much, and he saw how Cristiano Ronaldo had it and thought he deserved that as well. But by going away, being given, I'm not going to say a reality check, it's a bit of disrespect to where he's gone, but I just think, yes, he's flattered to deceive in recent seasons, but be given a chance, a second chance, and when Manchester United need it, they are paying the fee, they're paying the wages of Nani, so they're paying him to be playing this excellent football elsewhere. Why not just bring him back to the club?
Talking about coming back to different clubs and working on the same kind of principle, the player I was going to look at is going to be a reversal of the loan system. I'm looking at Ryan Bertrand, who's actually still at Chelsea. Now, this is a guy that's 25 years old, and he, I think, judging by all the statistics weighing through here, there, and the different deals, he's had 9 different clubs, and now he's at Southampton. Now, you're talking about Dutchmen making decisions and players moving here, there, and everywhere. Look at Southampton, and they have the meanest defence in the league. They've only conceded 5 goals. Ryan Bertrand, he's a left back. He's been part of that particular team now that under Ronald Koeman that is completely flying, and nobody would have predicted at the start of the season. And if you look at Bertrand's record, it's incredible. This is a guy that first made his Champions League debut in the final when Chelsea beat Bayern Munich on penalties, the Didier Drogba penalty and all the rest of it. He's also won the FA Cup. These are incredible honours for somebody that's 25 years old. And then talking of loan deals, also in this mean defence, look at Toby Alderweireld. He's come in from Atletico Madrid. He played in the Champions League final. He played in the quarterfinals of the World Cup for Belgium, and then he was surplus to requirements. Actually, when he was playing in that Champions League final, at that point, Atletico were 1-0 up with so many minutes to go. And then, of course, you know, everything else is history. They ended up losing to Real Madrid. He becomes surplus to requirements. Ronald Koeman says, thank you very much. He's come into Southampton. And look what he's doing as well. He's part of this amazing defence. Let's see how far Southampton can go. So when it comes to loan deals, for good and for bad, going in, going out, they are making a difference to all the leagues across Europe.
All of them, and no club more than Watford as well in the Championship, who love a loan deal, don't they? Another mention as well, quickly, for Luke Steele, goalkeeper. Good to see English players going out, and a goalkeeper as well, who was at Barnsley, now out at Panathinaikos in Greece. Hayley McQueen, you informed me that you've read somewhere that he's actually having Greek lessons and wants to be there on a longer term deal than just a quick 6-month loan.
Yeah, and I think he's joined, he's pretty much signed up for 3 years, and he's really doing amazing things. I think he was initially going to go out, go on loan somewhere, try his hand at potentially playing abroad, enjoy a different lifestyle. But as a player making these decisions, as a 29-year-old thinking, should I just go and play for another club in the Championship? Could I move abroad? I think it's a really brave and noble thing to do. And yeah, he's kept a couple of clean sheets. He's gone from playing for Barnsley, flipping heck, and he's now playing Europa League football and for a really, really good side out there in Greece.
Yes, and it is early days really for him, so the jury will still be out. He had a little wobble against PSV Eindhoven, but the thing that he's managed to do is retain his first team place and being considered as a goalkeeper to watch out there. You mentioned clean sheets, 3 clean sheets in 7 games in all competitions, at 2 of those games coming in Europe. So good luck to Luke Steele.
So there we have it. So bit of information there for you. More information regarding our HTC podcast with a live audience. on December the 14th. That's right. If you're not doing anything on a Sunday evening and fancy, yeah, a bit of a night out, you can find out more information on our website. And if you listen as well to our other podcast, a 20-minute bite-sized bit of fun previewing and reviewing all the Europa League and Champions League action. So you could also win an HTC One M8 handset engraved as well. So more details on that on the website, and if you listen to our other podcasts too, brought to you by HTC. So lots of excitement to come.
I'm Gary Neville and you're listening to The Offside Rule.
And finally, girls, holy smokes, Batman, there's something going wrong. Bosh, bang, pow. We mentioned Negredo at Valencia. And this kind of leads me on to my final topic.
I've got to tell you this, because you were saying bang, wallop, pow and all that. When I was at primary school, I was so bad at music. I messed up the triangle in the end of year assembly. My mum had to shout at me from the audience to say, Lindsay, because I missed my cue. So the next year, they're like, we're not going to give her anything, not even triangle. So you know what I had? Cards where I ran across the stage with pow and wham and bang. That was what I did.
Wow.
So I know this world very well.
That's so funny. Brilliant. Okay. But do you know the legal world? There's some funny things going on at the moment. This comic group, the makers of superhero Batman, are fighting them over the use of their logo. It is a huge bat. It does look like the Batman logo. However, it first appeared in 1919. They've used it for over 100 years. Batman's first appearance, I was quite surprised about this, was actually 1939. But they lodged opposition, as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, with the European Union's trademark arm claiming that this Batman logo looked exactly like the Valencia logo and vice versa. And it was just too close to its own images related to Batman. So therefore, they were trying to strip them of it and get them to change the logo. But they had it first. So we're going to have a look at other examples of strange suings or people making legal complaints in this wonderful and crazy world we call football. Kate.
Right, ladies. If I were to say to you, Beate Uzer, would you know who that was?
No.
Beate Uzer is the equivalent of Anne Summers in Germany. Beate Uzer was actually a Luftwaffe pilot. She was a lady pilot that wasn't allowed to fly after the Second World War, so she decided to become a door-to-door sales lady selling toys.
Avon calling.
That's the one, selling toys, and found out that lots of women out there who were having unwanted pregnancies and started talking about the rhythm method, because she'd learned it from her mum, who was one of the first doctors in Germany. And from there, she wrote a pamphlet all about contraception, natural contraception, and the first chain of German sex shops began that way. So Beate Uzer is actually the equivalent of Anne Summers in Germany. And in 2006, World Cup fever abounded all the way across Germany, and Beate Uzer decided that they were going to cash in by bringing out a special line of 17-centimetre vibrators. And these vibrators went by the names of Michael B, Ollie K and David B. Now, apparently, Michael Ballack and Oliver Kahn were less than impressed. And they decided that they were going to go and see their lawyers. Their lawyers said, this is a clear violation of image rights, apparently, because I don't know whether they felt underrepresented with 17 centimetres. And it went further than that, if you'll pardon the expression. And they had to withdraw the line, and also they had to pay damages as well.
Wow.
David B, on the other hand, took no action. David B being David Bentley.
Oh! Mine, not so fruitful. Fruity. Christian Vieri played for Atalanta for a while, and he filed a lawsuit against Inter Milan and the telecom company Telecom Italia. That's because he was determined to prove that he was being spied on. That was for a number of years as well, 1999 to 2005, so talking about a six-year period. You think that the club would like vehemently deny those claims, but apparently Moratti at the time said, yeah, actually we did. We spied on him for a while. We tapped his phone. The legal outcome of this case, I'm not even sure what happened because it sort of went under the radar afterwards. But I'm guessing because Moratti admitted it that he would have won some damages. But yes, yeah, spying on your footballers.
Legal battles and Rangers and controversy is something that happen every day in my life at Sky Sports News. But this is a very different legal battle for Rangers. A rugby fan, Russell Clark, said that Rangers, in trying to trademark their famous RFC logo, could not do so. So Rangers, the Scottish football club, applied to register the letters as an official trademark for selling merchandise and to stop others cashing in on the famous name. However, Russell Campbell stepped in and he argued the letters RFC, used by rugby football clubs for many years, could not be trademarked, claiming they shouldn't be exclusive to the Glasgow club, and said that they shouldn't be allowed to have a monopoly on them. But the UK Intellectual Property Office, the IPO, which rules on trademark disputes, has now found in favour of the old firm giants. So there you have it. Not quite as lucky for Victoria Beckham, though, because a football club actually won in this case as well. Peterborough.
Oh, Posh!
Posh! The Posh! They attempted to register their nickname as a trademark. Posh Spice genuinely opposed this. She objected to Peterborough's plans to be registered as The Posh or Posh, claiming that her nickname was so globally renowned and was a well-known trademark. But she changed her mind, though, and she did allow the club to register their nickname as a trademark after all. And the chief executive spoke out at the time. He said, "I'm led to believe Victoria Beckham's legal team have indicated they will withdraw their objection to our registration of the names." He said, "We have made a strong case." He said, "Maybe her team were not aware of the strength and depth of our usage of the name, which we have been using since the early 1920s. Now, I know she's getting on a bit, is Posh Spice. I love her, but she's not that old. And you'd think with David Beckham and knowing all about football, would have just said, "Come on, love. I've known they've been called that for ages. It's just how it is."
I imagine as well, from a point of view of Barry Fry, thinking, "What can I do here?" Rather than sue, he could have just said, "Could you just get David just to come and do an appearance or two for us here and there? Get some names on some backs of some shirts or cutting of the ribbon?"
Moving on from David Beckham and other heroes, let's go back to the World Cup. In 1998, Mario Zagallo was the coach of Brazil. Mario Zagallo is one of those legendary coaches because he's won the World Cup as a player and as a manager, the same as Franz Beckenbauer. So he's this great esteemed coach on many levels. But in 1998, he decided he was going to drop Romario, he and Zico, who's his number two at the time. Romario was less than happy about this, and at the time he owned a sports bar that was called Café do Gol, that gives you an indication of what it was all about. And he decided that on the toilet doors, he was going to have drawn and beautifully painted a picture of Mario Zagallo, this esteemed coach, sitting on the toilet, on the door to his own toilets. And his number two, no pun intended, Zico, was going to be next door to him, holding a loo roll. Now, this was not appreciated, let's say, by said esteemed coach or his number two, and they decided they were going to take legal action. And the justiciaries generally came round and they removed not only the paintings, but all the doors as well. Yeah. And he had to pay damages. So when it comes to having lavatorial humour, sometimes people don't always find it funny.
Hi, I'm Eddie Jenkins from TalkSport.
Yeah, and I'm Paul Hawksby from TalkSport.
And you're listening to the Offside Rule podcast.
Well, thank you very much for a thoroughly entertaining end to our podcast. Started with entertainment as well. So thank you very much to Mark and to Karen for stopping and chatting to the Offside Rule podcast after that game at Wembley. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, KP. Have you enjoyed your experience as a guest instead of just a contributor today? We never get to see you. We just hear you and read you.
It's been a fantastic experience. Thank you very much for having me, ladies. And thank you very much for the Toblerone.
Ah, yes, the Toblerone that keeps going on and on. We had it on the Euro preview show. It's on the main podcast. But it's nearly all gone, girls, I'm afraid to say.
It's the flight gift that just keeps giving. If you haven't bought anyone a lovely present back from the Seychelles, apart from the presence of yourself for the podcast, Lindsay, you bring back Toblerone. I prefer the Toblerone. Can I say that?
I had that dilemma, though, because what's the Seychelles famous for? Unless I bought you back some of the sand from the beach.
Ooh. You can continue listening to other podcasts, back catalogues as well via Audio Boom and iTunes. Our YouTube channel, The Offside Rule TV. Twitter, of course, we're there tweeting to our heart's content every day, 24 hours a day. 7 days a week, 365 days a year at Offside Rule Pod. You can go to the website as well, where, of course, you can read KP's Eurobites.
Friday!
On Fridays, every Friday, she's there. And that is offsiderulepodcast.com. Plenty of other blogs and features up there too. And you can head to our Facebook page, The Offside Rule, and give us a like. Thank you and goodbye. Au revoir.
Yes! Oh, yes!
The Offside Rule We Get It is brought to you by Continental Tires.